A lot of times, your farms are going to be seasonal, and so if people can't make enough during the year, you know, during the season when they're really putting in the work, it can be really hard to get through those harder winter months when they're not working as many hours and may have to find a side job. And I think when people are leaving the farm to go find a side job, you know, it may be less likely that they're going to be available to come back year after year. Housing can be very expensive, can be hard to find in our rural communities, and of course there are all sorts of life events that we need to pay for. Cars, student loans, rent, for people are starting families or really just saving for the future. So these definitely are things on the minds of farm workers as we're trying to figure out how to make it work for us in our lives. People can really just scrape by for so long. But there are a lot of things, there are practices that can help. We all know that this can be really hard. Farming is not like making cogs in a factory. There are a lot of things that go into how much money we make from year to year, and it can be really stressful to think about being able to pay your payroll every month and being able to give your employees what you really think they deserve. But there are definitely some things we can do. I think there are other ways a lot of times, aside from just giving a salary, that you can help support your farm employees. I've seen farm owners who provided gas cards for employees that had to drive from farther away to help in that way. Some people will give a health insurance stipend to just help a little bit with that, you know, help the people contribute towards their plans, or you can help people find winter work. Sometimes it helps to just, you know, be a little creative outside of just how much salary can you provide. Maybe you have a lot of land, some extra buildings where you live, and you could give somebody free housing on your land or a stipend towards their housing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good question.
I mean, that's come up in conversations too, and farm employees have also made that point of like, or I could just earn more. I think it's like income level too, in terms of like the cost to you as a worker and what plan you would be paying, buying. And so I've heard farm owners say, we had a conversation and there's some strategy in keeping wages a little bit lower so that a plan would be more affordable. And that stipend's coming in a different way. So, yeah, there's a little bit of nuance there.
I would say that's true. I think as soon as I started making more money in my position at my farm, I no longer qualified for the health insurance like subsidies. And so that was kind of a pain for me, but maybe this is a way of getting around that. Also, I've heard like on our farm, some people have partners off the farm who they get good health insurance through their partners, but others don't. And so maybe by making it a stipend, it sort of allows you to offer something to everyone.
I'm not sure about that.
I don't know about that either.
Oh, sorry. So the question was, wouldn't the employer pay less into taxes if they were paying higher wages instead of a stipend?
If your wages increase, you're paying more employee taxes and insurance bills and things like that. But if your wages low, it's negative.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think... Yeah.
That's a good question.
Thanks, Claire. Yeah, thanks for that question.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
All right. Yes, great.
Yes.
Continue.
thanks for the break. I get a little nervous up here. It's good to get a little breather. So I think I was just kind of make the point there that every farm sort of has their different strengths and their different resources that they can think about tapping into for other alternatives that you can offer to bring value and in the way of wages for your employees. But I think a couple other things that can help are the first two points there, which is doing yearly reviews with your employees. So you really have that time to check in with people, let them know, really be upfront about if there's opportunities for growth or if there are things they can be doing differently that would allow you to pay them more, so that, you know, so people know if they have the opportunity to move up and make more money, and you can make really clear what those expectations are and what they would need to do. So it's not just ambiguous, you know, what do I need to do to make more, or if it's possible. And then the top point, and I don't know if all farmers are willing to be that super transparent with their employees, but as an employee, I think it's always been nice to be able to really have a bit of a perspective into the budgeting process on the farm and really the thought process that a farmer is going through when they're trying to make the hard decisions between investing in employees versus equipment versus rising insurance costs or all of those different things. And I think if you're willing to be transparent with people, it can be really beneficial for employees anyway.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, thanks, Abby. Yeah, so now after each kind of deep dive, we've got some space for open discussion. So questions, thoughts, reactions that you're having, and our hope is to really come to this with the spirit of moving the conversation forward. So also if you have examples to share of how you're on a farm that's meeting these needs, that's something great to share. Yeah.
I just wanted to share on being transparent, that it does break down that barrier between employees and employers. Mm-hmm. And you can just have a conversation about the crew wants raises, how we look at what the revenues are, what the expenses are, how do we as a team decide to
That's great.
Annually, part of the budget process.
Yeah. Are you a farm owner?
Yeah, I think that would.
I'll just repeat what he had said. In that you had basically explained that having transparency of the budget, perhaps on an annual basis, allows the team of the farm, being the owners, operators, managers, et cetera, and employees, to all come together and understand why the budget is the way it is, and how it kind of, you said you'd use the term breaking down barriers for conversation about those things, and that was a strategy that you found successful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And just to clarify, are you a farm owner?
I'm not a farm owner, but I'm a farm manager.
Yeah.
So I also have this dynamic of being an employee, but also a manager.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks
for, maybe we should use, that's a smart idea.
Yeah, please, the microphone
Kathy.
Next.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy. Yeah. Anybody else have questions or thoughts, reactions?
Oh, we have.
Awesome. Thanks.
We're just people who play in the dirt with fancy microphones on, so please forgive us.
Well, I was just going to say that when I talk to people about working on our farm, we would love to pay them what they're worth, but we're still working towards that goal. We always will, but it's not there yet. We talk a lot about non-monetary benefits of being a farm employee, and those feelings we talked about at the beginning are part of that. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious what other ideas other farms have, these non-monetary benefits or things that they do for their employees to make them feel like beneficial employees. At our farm, you can take your dog to work. And that's a good non-monetary benefit, I think. So.
Yeah, that's great. Good time. Yeah.
So if folks couldn't hear, could everyone hear or no? A farmer here in the front offered an idea and a question of what non-monetary benefits can farmers offer to employees if money is tight, if the budget doesn't feel flexible to offer a higher wage, which they would like to give, but in the meantime, what are some other options they can work with?
Nice.
Yeah. We'll repeat your question,
Okay. So I'm a farm manager. We're on a small farm, and we're a four-season grower. It's a little bit...
I don't think that's him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, we're going to be digging into communication next. I think that's a great example of how powerful that is and how that can open up all sorts of conversations and help people kind of see the path forward. You guys have reactions to that? Yeah.
No, I'm just trying to think of how to summarize that for the recording. And I apologize if I mess it up, but essentially it sounds like open communication has also been a really important strategy that your farm has used to keep you feeling like you're in the conversation, especially when it comes to complicated conversation topics like leveraging volunteer work for produce at a monetary value. That's kind of a tricky thing because you're not working with consistent employment necessarily. You're working on a volunteer basis. So communication, it sounds like, is key in that moment to keep everyone on the same page and to make sure everyone feels valued.
Mm-hmm. To make sure that we would become, you know, viable going forward. Because oftentimes you don't know what's going on behind that curtain, so you don't know that there's an end to the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to move us forward, and Magdalene's going to take us into communication.
Let's do it. All right, I'll read this quote. We have a monthly meeting where folks come early, talk about how things are going and how we're doing. Just take that time to have this healthy communication, which I really enjoy. But the owners also check in with individuals day to day and see how we're doing personally. So that really contributes to healthy culture and ongoing communication. So the question asked was, what type of education and training would make your farm owner a better employer? Communication ranked at 79%. All of these things below here you can see are incredibly important things, and yet communication took the prize, considering that people value that clear, concise, transparent communication between coworkers and managers and owners. This quote is, "One of the big things I look for is a willingness to communicate openly and emotionally." 52% of respondents participated in regular check-ins at their most recent farm jobs. Clearly, that is working for these farms. The people like to be able to touch base. They like to have that human interaction and that availability of the time that really says to the employee, I value you, and I'm putting my incredibly precious time here as an opportunity for us to talk. 30% of these employees sat down with employers for formal employee reviews. I know a lot of us probably didn't get into this work because we love corporate structures. However, some of those structures have value, and those formal reviews can offer structure that make us feel seen, make people feel like their conversations are viable and important. And the much-loved morning crew meeting was a hot topic of discussion among focus group participants. So this clearly was something that people enjoyed. It was a way to center yourself and to get the day going, get the week going, keep people on the same page. And that's a really easy one. That doesn't take a lot of time, and it doesn't take a lot of resources. So why does communication matter to employees? I think it matters to all of us. You're establishing clear expectations, which prevents injury. It prevents people from running around in circles doing the same thing or doing the same thing wrong. It helps employees do their job well, and competence is an important feeling on your job. It helps employees see the role in the bigger picture, and that's something that our participant in the back was speaking to, is that they invested their time and they invested their work into a system because they believed in its longevity. And being able to ask questions and sharing ideas makes employees feel heard and valued. That's incredibly important. Even if it's a small idea, even if it's a bad idea in the long run, having the availability of somebody to hear it and say, like, you know what, let me think about it. That feels big. Open and two-way communication contributes to a culture employees want to be a part of. We're not here for, like, big bucks. We're here because we're passionate about farming. And so when we can talk about those things and nerd out about earthworms with our farmers, our mentors, the people we look up to, it's incredibly valuable. So here are some practices that can help. Talk about communication styles. Ask, do you like emails? Do you like texts? Do you want me to walk up to you and look you in the eye and say, please, do not forget to clean the milking equipment today? Obviously, it's important. Morning meetings and check-ins, that one's easy. It's a nice one that you can do. It's when people are gearing up for the day, getting ready to go, and yeah, your mind's got 75,000 million things on it, probably from last week too. Take that 10, 15 minutes, check in, just be like, how is everyone feeling? Yes or no, thumbs up, thumbs down. It's really important to center. There's some systems and tools, whiteboards, field maps, walkie-talkies. We probably all use these. Make sure they're working. Make sure employees like them. Ask them, do you like using walkie-talkies? Do they work? How can we improve that system? And maybe if it's not financially viable, well, let's see how we can work together on this. Let's work together to get to a better system. Because your employees are going to know, or maybe they've never been asked, how they like to communicate. And that's going to challenge them to tell you, yeah, I would really like to have a written note what you want me to do. And then as we get better at that, we're going to have a better system. Shared meals, that's something that we do on my farm, and it's incredible. It's a great opportunity just to relieve some tension of the day, talk with each other about goals for the week, goals for the month, things coming up, and to just meet as people and be in community together. So getting to know your employees, that was something that it's a great opportunity to learn communication styles in that moment, but also just remembering that we're all here, we're all struggling together and like pulling on the same rope together. And that's really vital and it's really valuable for growing community on your farm. And finally, that two-way communication. Thinking about how you invite feedback. Asking maybe close friends, do I feel approachable? Do I give off that vibe? Or maybe it's a little awkward saying, hi, I'd really like feedback, and this is really hard for me because I hate criticism, so if you could just write it on this note, and I won't come back until next week to read it, but please let's start there. I mean, it's awkward, it's vulnerable, it's weird, but it's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we wanted to share one specific example of a tool. So this is in place at Red Door Family Farm. They're in Athens, Wisconsin, and two of their employees separately mentioned this to me, so I was excited to follow up with Stacy and Tenzin, the co-owners of the farm. So they've got this board of ideas and improvements. It is a whiteboard situation on a fridge. So you can see people are, you know, interacting with that regularly. So there are these different categories of things that worked well, things that maybe didn't work so well, what do we want to push off until next winter, things that we want to consider doing next year, and then bigger goals that might span beyond a season or two. And so folks can just interact with this, jot things down when they come to mind, and add to it throughout the season. And then everybody kind of comes together at the end of the season. They have a meeting. They dissect this board, kind of go through it, and a lot of like learning and planning happens. And so I was talking with Stacy. Can you click to the next one?
Maybe you got it.
Thanks. I was talking with Stacy about like what spurred the idea for this, and she shared that for her, the most important part of this started as a way to stop saying no to innovation just because I'm busy during the season. And also empowering employees to have ideas with us and build the farm with us. So really knowing like, well, maybe I can't do much with that. I want to keep those lines of communication open. This is the best way for that to happen right now when we have 75,000 things on our minds and we don't want to lose this. We want to keep that moving forward, but using this specific tool in that instance. So.
Just one thing I wanted to point out here was this didn't work portion. Somebody had written MailChimp, and I just love that because, so that's it's an email server style thing that you can use, and if somebody hadn't written that, you might not know that your employee is a whiz with listservs because they did it in college. I mean, there are so many mind skills that you can throw these things on the board, and someone might say like, hey, I actually really know how to do that. You've opened up this two-way communication, and now these people who want to invest in your farm have tangible ways to do so.
Mm-hmm. And, Magdalene, before you move on, like looking at next year up there, you probably can't see it, but there's like VAPG. Like that is a huge value-added producer's grant. That's a giant undertaking.
Yeah.
And then above there is gravel under the barrel washer.
Right.
So like quite a range of things.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Oh, was I supposed to?
Oh, yeah, you, this one.
Okay, you want me to read this?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Okay, I'll read this one. I love check-ins. When I first tell people we do that as a practice, they often look scared. That worker-owner dynamic is so strong that there's nervousness around it. But in my experience, this has been really healthy and helpful. And that reaction just goes to show you that it can be done in a way that isn't healthy. But I think if you approach the check-in thoughtfully, we have a rubric and there are questions to guide the conversation. Emotionally, how are you doing? In terms of the farm, are there certain practices you'd like to see? Is there anything you have from past farm experiences that we could do here?
Yeah, so we just want to emphasize the value of check-ins, basically, by sneaking that quote in there. Mm-hmm. In my conversations with folks, like, that is just something that has such a huge impact. So wanted to emphasize it. But yeah, let's open it up again. If folks have questions or reactions, things that they want to share, things that they'd like to see and want some feedback on, just open discussion.
Yes.
Awesome.
Oh, you're gonna. Oh, yes.
1 second. We've got. Thanks. Kathy is a professional mic runner.
One day it'll all be. Yeah. Microchipped or something in my brain. I don't know.
I was just wondering if you guys could, if you had conversation about the communication dynamic between owner, supervisor, and everyone else, and just how that had worked.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of your role.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose I could, do you have more specifically, you mean just like that kind of that dynamic as a manager in between those?
Yeah, I mean, so we're owners and we have both managers and more, people who are being, who are doing more of the work under their direction. And it's just, it's a little, sometimes I know I need to step in and especially if the manager is still learning, some task or whatever, mm-hmm. And they're deferring, that one or both of them is deferring to me, and I know there's also a time when I just need to stay out of it and just, and let the manager work on that, and that's the best thing that I really can do, so.
Yeah, I think I am in that manager position because I'm managing probably 10 or 12 people under me, and so I have that sort of strange dynamic between the farm owner and the people that I manage, and it can definitely be a sticky spot, and I think that's exactly, like, all of these tools that Madeline just sort of talked about, I think are super helpful, and kind of what she said, just about kind of leaning into that discomfort, and if it, there will inevitably be moments that are tense and maybe sticky because the work that we do is often a little bit stressful, and I think recognizing when you need to take a breath and step away and say, hey, let's touch base about this later and see how that dynamic could have gone better, and maybe also really using those check-ins. I think maybe with that sort of relationship, doing those check-ins more frequently so you can really see what's working and not working for your manager and also for you, because ultimately it's your farm. And so I think as a manager, or your manager probably really would like to know sort of how much direct, influence you would like to have, because that I think that can be where it can be sticky, is that balance of you don't want to micromanage what they're doing, but ultimately it's your farm and you want to be able to see things work the way you want it to. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess the biggest thing is just have the tough conversations and lean into those feelings about it.
Yeah. Oh, we got a question in the back.
Okay, just as a follow-up to your statement, I'm a manager as well, and I kind of find that sometimes I'll be working with volunteers and I'll be giving them instructions, and then my farmer will come in and have a different take or correct. No. Things seem to change day to day depending on how things are going or what the needs are, but I always go back and follow up with her after the conversation and just say, okay, so I thought you wanted us to do it this way. This is the way we've been doing it, and I heard you tell so-and-so to do it this way. Just so that I know and that I'm getting across what you want, what do you want for next time? or should I check with you, or are there conditions that I could have made this decision better? Because, you know, I just follow up. I go back after the fact and re-clarify to make sure that I'm executing their wishes.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That seems very, very important. I've heard recently a farm owner talk about how in the past he may have seen something and just hopped off the tractor and run over to like check on what was going on, but realized that actually, you know, maybe he should just check in with his farm managers to see like, oh, this is maybe not what I expected to see, but I think they probably have a plan, they're doing something, they've talked about it, and instead of like going in there and potentially like creating a bit of a, I don't know, confusing situation, he instead has like redirected his approach and checked in with, with the folks that he's working closely with so that he doesn't kind of confuse that structure, essentially. Yeah. Did you have your hand up?
Yeah.
Oh, 1 second, sorry.
We got the really big room.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle management role, and through my own like ambitions of like, no, I can handle this, you know, I've definitely like made my own level of mistakes, and I am given a lot of independence, and so that's, you know, good encouragement to learn through the process. But through those mistakes, I've definitely learned that it's better to kind of like filling in your employer, like kind of in that constantly, you know, they're not seeking the check-ins, but I'm like giving it to them anyway. And how are the relationships between your employees going and stuff like that? And that's kind of helped teach me that, like, you know what, I'm still learning. I don't know everything, and you might know more, you know, some things, and like give me some tips. And so it's like those micro, you know, how are things going? So encouraging your middle managers to come up to you and just be like, this is how today went, this is how this week went, and this is what I'm having trouble with, and then giving your feedback all the time, not necessarily like being the micromanager, but offering that support whenever absolutely necessary.
That's great, yeah. I feel like you're contributing to the broader culture too, and like setting that example. I think we've got a question back there.
How beneficial that transparency has been, and just like executing and just having an overall view of what's going to happen, and, and sharing that with people who have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
So I was just going to say transparency and levels of communication. Ways I feel to communicate.
That's great. Yeah. Do you want to try to summarize that? Could people hear that in the back? No.
I'm gonna try to get somebody to
try. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, so like just really incorporating intentionally transparency and communication. So people coming into the day, for example, have an idea of like what that day is gonna look like. And that's a different form of empowerment. Like you have, yeah, like there's a very different feeling if you just show up and somebody's telling you moment to moment like what you're gonna be doing versus you see the day in front of you, you're able to kind of connect that to the bigger picture and see your role in that work.
Yeah, and I think you made a really good point that it's that you're being intentional to do that for the people who are the newest workers and the people who are maybe often left out of that conversation. And I think that is a really good way to get people on all levels like more engaged, more dedicated to what you're doing, and wanting to work for the mission of the farm.
Yeah, great. I think we have time for one more if anybody else wants to share anything. Yeah. Let me, you can just speak into my microphone.
So I know I'm going to talk for more of a larger scale operation, Forest Keeling Nursery. We're a big company, but the fact that we have, let me try it. Yeah. So we have biweekly, twice a month meetings with our managers. That way we can go ahead and if we have issues, we're able to sit down with the managers and the owners, and we have our discussions. every month, the last Friday of every month, we take 30 minutes right before lunch. We have a big safety meeting. So we go over safety precautions with all of our employees, and then we go ahead and we provide lunch. That's a big thing, is they love when we provide lunch. Absolutely love it. So that's why we'll provide pizzas. We'll do soups. We ask if there's an employee that wants to provide, because we have lots of employees that like to cook, and so they'll go ahead and offer up to make lunch for their safety meetings. So that's one way that we get feedback at those safety meetings saying, hey, we see this issue. We need to bring it up. And so hearing from the employees at least once a month, having that meeting, and then also having the meetings with the managers every 2 weeks, that's great. Because I know I'm on the manager level. I'm an upper manager level here at Forest Keeling, and it's just great to have that communication. Because without that communication, you kind of fail as a company. So awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, everyone. Okay, Abby's gonna take us into a professional and safe work environment.
Yeah, that's actually a good segue into, because those are great professional practices on your farm. So I'm gonna read another quote from one of the focus group participants. The systems on the farm are really solid. The owners have their stuff together, and that helps because it's a system that we can trust in. They've honed it over time to be realistic for our bodies and our equipment, time, and schedules. And there's also a level of rigor, but it's healthy, and it makes me feel proud of what we're doing. And I think we've all seen this translate into better tenure on the farm. So I think that quote speaks really well to why a safe and professional environment is important on your farm. And it's important in all workplaces, but I think at farms there can be a tendency to sort of overlook this. Like, it's not really a normal workplace. We're all sweaty and we're dirty, and it's just not a really traditional workplace. And so I think that can go really wrong if you let it. And so it's really important to just make this a part of your farm culture so that people feel safe and feel respected, and it's just part of being on your farm and on your team, and people will want to be there. So there are a lot of things that we can do to make our farms more professional and safe environments. These are some of the things that came up during Sarah's focus groups with farm employees across the country. All sorts of different things that kind of fall into different categories. Maybe orientations, employee handbooks, those are all about setting expectations, what's expected of your employees, and making sure everybody knows and is on the same page and knows what to do. There are a lot here that are about taking care of physical needs, making it clear to your employees that they're not just a cog in a machine. We recognize everybody as people, and we care about you being able to access shade, access water, know when lunch is, know when you're gonna get a break. Your bathrooms are clean, our community spaces are clean, and people can feel safe in those conditions. And then there's also other things that work to really build trust and care among the people on your team, like setting group norms and agreements so that people agree on how they're gonna treat each other and interact on the farm. Inviting people to give input, sharing meals like Magdalene talked about, and calling out microaggressions. If you see people being treated poorly on your farm, like really calling that out and making it an example. So many, many things that we can do, and probably more. Whoopsie. So why does it matter? You want all people to feel safe and respected working on your farm. As an employee, if I have a choice, I am not likely to return to a place that where I don't feel safe or respected where I'm working. And it's especially important in the very traditionally straight white communities where we live to overlook this and maybe put up some blind spots for, you know, how we can make people who are different than us feel comfortable and safe in our spaces. For people of color, for queer people, like, we really need to be sort of re-examining our blind spots and thinking about what we can do to really make our farms a safe space for everybody, all sorts of people. Let's see. We also want to recognize that the work that we're doing is professional, that it's appreciated. We want people to take pride in their work and know that they're appreciated for the contributions they make to the farm.
Do you want me to add? I have a note.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add something too that when I started at the farm that I'm at, a really important thing that I was connected to is I was invited to the Farmers Union chapter meetings that they were having, without any pretense that I would have to, that I'd have to pay to join, without really any agenda aside from just like come and meet the community. And that very simple ability to reach out and to connect with other farmers in the area and other employees who had also been invited was monumental. I think that was really the day when I said, I could actually do this. I could actually live out here. I can see community here, where before I had worried so much, like, I am coming from the city where I have friends everywhere, and now I can see that I can make these and establish these connections. Like, right there, that to me was proving my work was valuable and professional because there was a community of professionals all doing it there as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Magdalene.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of things we can do, a lot of practices we can use to make our workplaces more professional and more safe. Some examples here. We can put professional systems in place to make it really clear to everybody what's expected of them, what you're looking for, what to do, what are the rules, so there's just no ambiguity there. So you can do, you know, formal interviews. Maybe that's a very a good formal orientation onboarding process where you can really lay out the important things about being on your farm, whether that's food safety rules or your sexual harassment policy, or do you require people to wear shoes in the field? Where do they access a bathroom, depending on where they're working? Those are all really like baseline important things that it can be really confusing if people don't know them right away. And then an employee handbook, something, you know, a lot of farms I worked on didn't have an employee handbook, and it's really nice. It's a nice thing for employees to be able to reference, have it right there in a community space where people really know what is the policy on this thing. Do I have sick days? How many? After how many years do they start to accumulate? Or any of those things. It's nice to just know where you can find those. Let's see, community norms and agreements. Do either of you have good examples of those that you could share more about? I don't have that on my farm, but I think it's a really good idea.
Nothing particularly formalized. I'm sure there are some formalized things, but it's mostly picked up on how I was spoken to from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I was spoken to with respect. Others were spoken to with respect. Others were spoken about with respect. If there was critique of maybe a farming practice, it was never done in a derisive or disrespectful nature toward the farmer. It was more of a, I wouldn't do it that way. And it's just like the communication was always from a baseline of seeing everybody as working on the same team and doing better together, all together, you know. Yeah. So that was like a cultural norm that shaped the way that I think it is and has been there.
So you can really set those norms just through your example and acting in a way and communicating with people in a way that you want everybody to act. And I think some people really do go to the lengths of sitting down with their team and coming up with a list like that together that everybody can say out loud.
I like that.
And sign it, and then we can reference back to that and really put it on paper that we're agreeing to these rules of our community and how we want to be treated. Other things that we can do sort of speak to taking care of the people's physical health again, whether that's stretch breaks in the field and reminding people to go drink water, making sure they know it's okay to go to the bathroom when they need to go to the bathroom. I've certainly worked on farms where it was frowned upon if you needed to get up and go to the bathroom, or if you cut your finger in the field, like, you know, lick the blood off and keep working because we're busy and we're working. But if you don't want to have that sort of culture on your farm, could be a good idea to, you know, just make that really clear to people that you expect them to take care of themselves. And then supporting conversations about anti-racist, anti-sexist, all of those things, I think making that a part of the conversation and being explicit about it, talking about it, calling it out when you see it will make that a more ingrained part of your culture and I think when farm owners and leaders set that example openly for their employees, it definitely does become a part of the culture, and I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. And Magdalene, did you want to talk about your zine?
So the Not Our Farm Worker zine, actually I'm kind of new to it, but that was something that there's a publication that is called Not Our Farm, meant to reach people who are not landowners and maybe not farm owners, but are working on farms, and it's meant to highlight these conversations. And that's how I got involved in the first place. It was printed, stapled, and laid out on the community table the first day I walked in on my job. And that having that be presented as like, this is normal, we're gonna talk about these things, and you can talk about these, and here's like resources if you don't wanna talk about them with us, was like, I don't know, I loved it. That made me feel incredibly great. So that could be a potential resource. It's free to print out, and you could print it, throw it on the table, and just have a follow-up meeting. What did you think? What did you read? Are there things in there I could do better? Are there things in there you love about the farm you want to, like, tell them? You know, so.
Yeah, and so you can find it on the Not Our Farm website.
Yes,
and then there are
a
bunch of profiles of Not Our Farmers, so people working on farms that are not their own. So they're a really great worker-centered resource. Yeah, thanks, Magdalene. Okay, so opening it up again for questions, reactions, comments. Yeah, Jen. Oh, 1 second, Jen. Sorry.
Thank you. One, I love Not Our Farm. Thank you for the work you do. That's really cool. Two, it seems like making a community agreement should never be reactive. Like, it's not like, oh, someone called someone an idiot, put it on the list. Like, that, I've seen that happen before, and it kind of misses the mark on open communication, whereas, like, you were saying, like, Not Our Farm was on the table when you walked in, like, that is proactive in starting those conversations, that was the only comment about, like, it's great to have a community agreements if they're not kind of in a shamey way of, like, oh, don't do this again, it hurt everyone. But yeah, so proactiveness in that.
Great, yeah, thanks. And when I feel like when I've talked with farmers and farmers generally who have done that and created those on their farms, it's with a lot of intention at the start of the season. But thanks so much for calling that out. And then it's an opportunity to return to that for like morale or during times of tension when maybe you want a reminder of like, oh, these are things that we talked about at length that we agreed upon. Let's just spend a little bit of time in that space and move forward. And I'll just mention quickly, we're working on a toolkit to share a lot of this information and examples, and so we'll have, community agreements are pretty personal, and so I don't think we'll have an example, but we are working on an outline for how to approach that work if you want to create one, and prompts to help in that space. Yeah, thanks, Jen. Yeah, any other questions or thoughts?
So sometimes you can be proactive, but sometimes you also have to be reactive on some situation. So have you seen successful and unsuccessful ways of handling that? I've always wondered, do you handle it directly with the person and then with the group in addition, or it just ends up being that tricky situation of knowing exactly how to do that the best way.
Yeah, do you guys have examples coming to mind?
I feel like it depends on what you're dealing with, but I think if it's in the case of calling out some sort of microaggression or if, you know, somebody on your team is being disrespected, I think it's probably important to call that out in front of everybody to defend this person and make it clear that you don't tolerate that. But depending on, I mean, if it's not something like that where you need to set an example, I guess I personally tend to have those conversations off to the side. So somebody isn't put, some things people might maybe need to be put on the spot for, but other things maybe are better private.
And sometimes one person feels uncomfortable and they had to come, one person feels uncomfortable, they have to come to you separately, and then you need to address it with the other person, but you also want everybody to know, don't do this, you know? Those are the, like, it's tricky to address it in the situation because you know that it's like a sensitive situation or somebody might feel, you know, like you don't even know that somebody was offended, you know, until they come to you afterwards. So it's that, like, handling that after the fact or during it. Yeah, those are always like the hardest situations.
Yeah.
I would think that including everyone from the beginning with intentional cultural settings to say, like, we're all going to be in on this and we're all going to hold each other accountable means you're not the only one doing it. And you can rely and lean on your employees then to say, hey, we all made this agreement. Do we need to change that? Are we changing our minds here? And if everyone else is like, well, no, of course not. We don't want this behavior. You're not alone in doing that. You're not suddenly like the police for all the naughty friend, like the employees. Like, it's everyone's working together. And like, if you're supporting your employees when they say, hey, I noticed that, I don't like that, and you support them, then others are gonna be like, whoa, I won't, you know, like we're all on the same page here. And I think just you don't feel like you have to do this alone. You're not doing this alone if you're including everybody from the beginning. That's all.
Yeah, great. Taking notes.
Yeah.
Anything else? We've got some time for maybe one or two more comments or questions.
Let's keep going.
All right, let's keep going. So over to Magdalene for creating opportunities for education, training, and advancement.
This is our final one, so thank you for staying so attentive. Our team is entrusted with tasks, and we have the tools to communicate our needs, do the work, and then wrap up. This makes the feeling of competence and trust very clear. Having that trust in your workers puts a lot on them, but it makes us feel very empowered. And personally, that makes me more likely to stay here. So what type of education and training would help you advance in your career in this field? This is specifically for the career of farm employment and management. Production is at the top at 74%. So as you can see here, this person is using a tool. I'm afraid I don't know what it's called. Looks like some kind of a cool thingy-ma-jingy. It's a that. And I don't even know what that is, but that's just because we don't use it. But I'm like, cool, I would love to learn how to use that. If I was going to be a veggie grower, sure. But I know that, like, at the farms that I've talked to other employees, that they are, it's usually a very open thing. It's like, hey, I really want to learn how to use a paper pot transplanter. They're like, cool, let's do it. I'd love for you to know how to do that so I don't have to. So I think that that's something that people are really excited to learn. People want to be engaged on the farm, and they want to be engaged in a way that allows them to use their variety of skills but also develop new ones. Everyone wants to use a chainsaw, all right? No, I'm just kidding. That's not true.
Flamethrower.
Flamethrower. That's what I'm saying. But then, as you can see, there's all these other things here that are very vital and important. You've got data-driven decision-making. That's transparency. That's budgeting. That's knowing information about the animals, knowing information about the crops, the seeds that you're buying. Employee management, we were coming back to communication. That's culture building, conflict resolution, communication, racial equity, intercultural competence, time management, empathy, all of these, you could say, and to some degree here, we're talking about soft skills. Those are all things that are really important and probably things that your employees are going to have and are going to be excited to share with you, too. So just letting you know, here's the numbers. Oh, hold on for Kathy. She's got a microphone.
In these percentages, when you were doing this, taking this data, was this multiple choice, pick as many as are applicable? Was it fill in the blank?
Yep, it was pick as many as are applicable. And so production was at the top, but many people were picking more than one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Seven.
That's a good context, because otherwise, numbers.
Yeah.
Building autonomy for workers is a really valuable thing. And if you can work towards giving people different roles, it gives them a sense of responsibility and ownership. About 1 in 4 want to be working in farm management position 5 years from now. That's huge. That's a lot of us. We really care. 51% listed opportunities for growth and advancement as one of the top 2 things farm owners can do to retain them over time. So growth and advancement, that's something I think a lot of us really value in our work, no matter what that is. We want to feel like we're working towards goals that enrich our lives and enrich the thing that we're investing in. And when you're investing in a farm, it feels so much more precious than investing in, like, my Target job or something like that, which are valuable and important, but there's something very different and visceral here. We're not here to climb a corporate ladder. We're here to, like, climb literal ladders and, you know, stuff like that. 10% of respondents received a professional development stipend ranging from $100 to $1,000 per year. So that's really cool. A lot of the farmer employees that I talk to have spoken about how they're getting excited about trying things out on the farm. They're trying out with a small herd of lambs. They're going to do a little pilot project like, I'm going to try rabbits. We've got people who are growing herbs. We've got people who are trying out different things. And they can do that because they have this relationship with their employment or with their employer. And in some cases, they're even receiving some money for that, or at least being guided towards those resources through grants or with the unions or whatever it may be to actually achieve and reach those goals. That's huge. Being able to have that space to explore and play is probably what led a lot of people to being farm owners today. So why does this matter to employees? It allows us to take on new and interesting work. It's exciting. It's fun to use a chainsaw. It balances out more mundane, repetitive tasks. Chainsaw helps them contribute additional value to the farm. This is exciting. This means that you can actually be touching the different aspects of the farm. You're helping out with building things. You're helping out with planting things. Maybe you're, I don't know, learning about plumbing or learning about electrician work and like all of these cool things that you never thought you'd get to do unless you went to school for it and paid a lot of money and had someone tell you, well, you're not that good and you're not getting the job. This is a way you can actually do it. It's really fun, and humans love to learn. Helps employees move closer to longer-term goals. So this is exactly what it's talking about with that stipend. A lot of us, I don't remember the statistic, but a majority of people who are working on farms want to end up in some sort of either farm management role, farm ownership role. These are the moments that we're looking for to learn these skills, to develop these skills, and to take them into our own businesses. And that's more valuable than any course or class because that's hands-on training with a trusted mentor. That's huge. That's why I'm here. Like, it's so cool. So what are some practices that can help? You can be transparent about what is possible over time. You probably don't have a ton of time and a $1,000 stipend to just hand out on top of providing huge amounts of wage increases and learning about cultural sensitivity. There's a lot going on. But being transparent about what it is you can do at the time is huge. Maybe it's as simple as, let's talk about how I organize my bins. This is how I organize my bins. What do you think about that? I mean, it can just be exploring and opening that conversation and allowing somebody into your mind, which I'm sure is abuzz with a thousand things. Let them get in there and let's talk about this. How do you organize your bins? Establishing parameters. What does this look like and when? So that's about boundaries and understanding, you know, when can these opportunities happen? When can this education happen? Maybe I can't give you a lengthy explanation about how I rotationally graze my sheep in the middle of June, but I can do it in November when we're all finished and things are wrapping up and things are slowing down. So let's sit down and talk about it. But to that point, I think it's okay to ask the employee, what are things you want to learn? What are things you find valuable? Help me understand what that is so I can make time for that, because I think it's a lot to put the onus on a farmer owner to say, like, you have to also make a curriculum and you have to deliver training. That's a lot. They want, if employees are excited about it, they'll have ideas about what they want to learn and they'll engage with you on that. Check in regularly, talk about goals. That's just a way to do this. Connect employees to your farmer community. That's something that's, I think, is really vital, really valuable. It's a way that you can say, well, I don't know how to do this, but that farm knows how to do this, and why don't I connect you? Why don't I do an introduction? And they can maybe help you grow this thing that you want to try out or answer your questions about this or that. Consider establishing a management or team lead structure. So clearly that's huge. Having somebody who can answer those questions, who can share their knowledge and experience and excitement about a position, and they're not also trying to do a budget balance sheet, that's incredible. They're a resource for you to be able to say, like, I really don't have the time, but you know what? My farm manager, I think, could start answering some of these questions, and then we could maybe all talk about goals later. And finally, providing wages that reflect formal responsibilities. So this is calling back to the wages. It's calling back to professionalism. When you're taking those skills and those goals and you're attaching a value to them, you might not even have to deliver on that value, but you're telling your employees, this is something that I value monetarily, and here's how I got that number. And then they can say, oh, cool, well, I want to learn this, this, and this, but I don't think I have time for this, this, and this. It just gives a parameter by which you can structure your goals and how to move forward on those things that allows you to feel professional and allows it to feel fully developed. Let's see.
Awesome. Abby, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you want to share a little bit about Featherstone and their support for you?
Yeah, I think this I think it's probably different for everybody, but this one for me was definitely a big reason that I've engaged so much at Featherstone, where I work now, is that they always encouraged me to seek out educational opportunities in ways that really did tangibly help the farm. Mm-hmm. So, like, I used that personally. My farm sent me on a couple trips out east to go to a farming conference, and I toured a lot of farms, and I learned a lot of things doing that we now do on our farm. And then I also have a budget that I make every year that I can use for the team that I manage, and I kind of just encourage them to seek out, whether it's going to Wisconsin to go to pumpkin school last year and learn about growing better winter squash, or, you know, buying a different book that just came out to learn about something to do in the high tunnels. But for me, that was super beneficial, just being encouraged to seek out educational opportunities and having a little bit of funding to do it.
That's great. Yeah. And there is community all around. So I feel like in my conversations with farm workers, they really value that opportunity for their, you know, employer to connect them with folks that are in their sphere, and just like widen that net and build that community. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So open conversation. Yeah. What's coming up for you all in the space of opportunities for building skill, taking on new responsibilities?
Or even something that's worked well for you. Like, success stories are fun to hear, too, or creative approaches.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, 1 second. Rick.
I just want to ask how long you both worked at the farms that you're at.
This is my 10th season at Featherstone.
I think this is my third. Yeah.
Elena's saying yes.
Yes. Elena works with me, too.
Yeah. Don't be shy. And we can broaden it, too. This is our last, like, open discussion. So anything that's coming up,
So I'm a very nervous public speaker, but it feels like my experience might help a little bit. I've been an employee at a farm for, I think, 15. Has it been 16, Rick?
Wow.
It's a long time. And I think the biggest contributor to that for me personally has been that as I've got skills, I've been given more responsibility. Excuse me, you're a very nervous speaker. The cool thing about the management there is that that's just the case with everybody. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a situation where it feels like it's a collaboration between all of us. It feels like everybody there is a manager. And so the longer you're there, the more you have your own imprint on the farm, the more it feels like it's yours. And it makes it really hard to leave. Because honestly, the few times I've let myself think about going someplace else, the thought of the farm going on without me kind of breaks my heart a little. Mm-hmm. So just in case that's helpful for anybody. I actually have, I own my own farm too now, so I work part-time there, and part-time running my own business, and the reason I do that is because I just love the other farm so much, I could never stop, so.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, I feel like what's coming up for me, too, is like this broader opportunity to build long-term partnerships, really to the benefit of everyone, including the farm. Yeah, thanks so much.
My last question. Experience with multicultural environments, English as a second language, and communication is a huge topic here. Safety is a huge topic here, but it's hard to communicate proper safety mechanisms and then, like, develop this respect plan with people that, you know, are afraid to speak up because it's not their culture, and it's, like, kind of a strange thing in general to speak up about these things. And so sometimes you find, like, you know, a segregation happening by accident because it's just easier, you know, when you have a manager that is your same ethnicity on both sides. It just seems to be, you know, more efficient that way. So, but yet you still have these like pretty big topics, and you want them to, everybody to feel included and involved and everything. But it's hard to do your safety training and then be sure that everybody's getting the same message. So thoughts?
Yeah. Abby, do you want to speak to
that?
Yeah,
I can't. I feel like I have a lot of thoughts about that. But I'll respond a little bit. So our team has a lot of folks that work with us from Mexico. So I manage a team of both English speakers and Spanish speakers. And so I'm communicating a lot of the day in both languages, which can be challenging. But we definitely bring in interpreters for a lot of things, especially the important things, like you said, with safety. Mm-hmm. We always have meetings at the beginning of every year where we go over the same things every year, the food safety, the tractor safety, just some of those other like important community things. And we do it in English and in Spanish. And I think over the years, we've done it both ways, where we have separate English meetings and Spanish meetings, but I personally really like it and see value in doing both simultaneously. It takes extra time, which is can really be a headache when you're really busy in the season, but I think it's really nice to, so like you said, so we're not segregating. And I think you have to be so intentional to not segregate, because there really is just, can be really different cultural expectations. And when I took over leadership of my team, I sort of just made it a talking point and constantly tried to keep everybody together and not segregating, whether it was working on the same jobs in the field or at lunch or around the break table. And there were times where I did have to actually call a meeting with my local workers and tell them, like, I'm noticing that you guys are getting up and going to lunch at 11:59. And all the other Mexican workers are staying until 11 or till 12:12 because they want to finish this field. Like, let's just think about this. Let's be all a team and like, let's finish the field together. Like, we don't want different expectations. That's just one example, but I just think it's really important to set those standards, and you have to, I think you do have to just constantly work towards it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it worked. And the people that I had to call out were embarrassed. Some of them were kind of mad and defensive, but it was just, it worked and it didn't happen anymore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I wonder if maybe there are less local people who work on our farm than back then. And I don't know if that's because I'm a little more strict with like not allowing that shit to happen. So. I don't know.
Real talk.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Shall all right, progress? We can move on. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So kind of back at the beginning here, this is like us digging into two pretty entrenched challenges with this issue of employee retention on one hand, and really trying to figure out like what can be done to support long-term sustainable farm working careers. And so obviously, you know, what we haven't talked about is the broader environment in which we are operating. There are a lot of pressures and different forces kind of shaping what might feel like is possible, I think, especially in the wages conversation as well. But our work here is very much focused on what might be possible at the farm level, and really just looking at this tiny, tiny piece of it, of understanding what do farm employees value in a work experience, and what might over time be able to push us closer to that future Magdalene was talking about at the beginning of, this is a skilled profession and can it be a long-term career? And so, you know, the things that we've talked about here are mutually beneficial by putting that effort and energy into, you know, thinking what you can do in that space of wages or non-monetary benefits as well, building strong communication structures and skills, creating a safe and inclusive and professional work environment, and providing those opportunities for taking on more responsibility, building autonomy. All of those things, you're going to be meeting needs that your employees have and want to have fulfilled, and you're going to kind of be, as a farm owner, and in partnership with your employees, like building those pathways where you can potentially get to the place of deep partnership over time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a long journey. could you click ahead, Meglin? No picture there. Well, there is a very cute photo there, but it's not showing up.
I'm gonna try.
Anyway, so the good news is there's a lot of work happening in this space. There are a lot of resources that exist. There's a lot of policy work and advocacy happening. I'm just gonna talk about two little things that we're doing through Fair Share and in partnership with UW Extension. So those two things on the top, BTEC and Teams, becoming the employer of choice and training and education for aspiring managers. These are two programs that have come into existence through conversations with farmers saying, hey, I have production skills pretty dialed in, but there's this whole other skill set that you need in farming often, and that is working with other humans and creating a really positive work experience while you're like juggling a bunch of different things and maybe really stressed out. So these are peer-to-peer, so farmer-to-farmer labor management training programs that we've built. Becoming the employer of choice is specifically serving farm owners and employers. It's 8 sessions online. Farmers are on the training team. We've delivered that already this year, but there's still the opportunity to engage with recorded sessions if folks are interested. And then we'll deliver that program again in late fall. I'm looking at Claire, because Claire and I have worked closely on this. We would love to deliver it in fall and not in winter next year, but we'll see. So if you have questions, you can grab either of us or just check out Fair Share's website. And then Teams is specifically serving current and aspiring firm managers, so people who are already serving in a management position or really want to feel more comfortable stepping into that more formal leadership role. Abby is somebody I've worked very closely with, and I know Magdalene's going to be in the trainings as well. So those start this March, and there are 4 sessions. They're online, 2 hours each. They're very much discussion-based, so there's a lot of learning happening amongst everybody. I think the last thing I want to mention is that I've already mentioned this, that we're building this toolkit that is just going to be full of a lot more information than we could go over today, including a bunch of tips and concrete examples that farms have shared of how they're meeting these needs in really big and little ways. So that is something that is part of my dissertation. So it will be done by April. So plan on it. All right, cool. Over to Magdalene.
Do you want me to read this one?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Along with environmental and economic sustainability, we need to consider the principles of worker sustainability and what goes into making a farm business function smoothly over time. Farmers should ask what they can provide so workers can not only make it through one season, but could also make this into a career. Many of us do not feel like that is possible right now, but we want it to be. Shifting to a more worker-centered approach of employment would improve the well-being of farm workers and increase retention rates and business longevity for farm owners. And that's Katie Cosmos. I just wanted to say 2 things, which is that I wanted to say that it's important to remind everyone in this room that a lot of workers, a lot of farm employees are drawn to the energy and passion and drive of farmers. We admire it. We admire the spirit. We admire the hard work. And there are a million jobs that could be easier, that could pay more. But we're here because we care about the work. We care about the earth. We care about the role of farms and the role that they play in regenerating the earth. And the success of the farm. The success of the farm is something we're putting at the forefront of our minds. You know, and it might not seem like it, but that's where those tools can guide those conversations so that we're all on the same page and we're all steering the boat in the right direction. And the other thing I wanted to say is that farming takes innovation, and the answers are there. We just need to work together to find them, and I think we need to work together to find what works for each farm. And every farm is going to have its own unique system. That means it's going to have its own unique cultural agreements, its own unique monetary and non-monetary benefits and goals and principles for funding or moving forward on professional development.
Awesome. All right, and that's it. So thanks so much, everyone, for being here with us in conversation. Thanks to Magdalene and Abby for bringing so much of their experience to this as well. So I think we can stick around, like, offline for a couple minutes if people... Oh, yeah, sorry. Magdalene has a very important prompt. Yeah, go
for it. Oh, so I just wanted to say at the roundtable yesterday, we invited some farm employees to join us, and then we actually generated some ideas just from a short 30-minute session. So I just thought you might want to engage with these questions and see what some of the responses were just for this quick, like, let's just grab some farm employees and talk with them and see what they're thinking. So if you wanted to peruse this board, it might be kind of a fun thing to read from people who are actually here today at the conference.
Yeah.
So kind of a fun way to feel the community that's actually here too.
And if you're a farm employee and would like to add things,
yeah,
there are lots of multicolor post-it notes here and pens. So please feel free to add to that as well. Yeah, I think we've got one last question in the back.
I was just thinking with, is FairShare working on anything with, so have farmers been identified as a need employment niche, like they've done with the meat processors and previously truck drivers and nurses, where potentially there is some kind of a subsidy coming to help farmers pay good employees?
Oh, I don't know. I'm looking at Claire. No. Maybe. We don't know. But thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, I'll write it down.
Yeah,
okay. That's interesting.
It's going on the post-it. Yeah, thank you for asking that. I'm not aware of that. Is anybody in the room? Does that ring a bell for anybody? No. Okay, well, we'll do a little bit of research and see if there's any movement there. All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Turn my mics off.
And then just quickly, if anybody came in late, there are still extra handouts in back and evaluations for the conference.